Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
Thanks for listening to the Radio Boston podcast. If you'd like to support WBUR, go to radioboston.org and click the pledge button in the upper right-hand corner. Okay, back to the show.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. We continue our coronavirus coverage today. Just a few key updates. Boston Long Wharf Marriott, where the Biogen conference that led to the majority of the Massachusetts cases happened, closed this morning. The Boston Celtics are in a self-quarantine after being exposed to a Utah Jazz player with the virus. And the Elliott K-8 school in Boston has closed all three campuses for a week because a non-member of the school community who is in one of the buildings is presumed to have the coronavirus. We've just learned this afternoon that several museums will be closing as well, such as the Museum of Fine Arts and the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum. Nationally, speaking with reporters earlier, President Trump said that the U.S. is in, quote, great shape, end quote, compared with other countries. Yesterday, he imposed incoming travel restrictions on foreign nationals from 26 European countries, but the ban exempts the United Kingdom. The latest numbers from Massachusetts, as of early this afternoon, there are 95 presumptive positive and confirmed cases. 19 of those are in Suffolk County, which includes Boston. And joining us now to take our questions and yours is Mayor Marty Walsh of the City of Boston. Welcome, Mayor Walsh.
How are you?
I'm well, Mr. Mayor. How are you?
Well, good. Continuing here on a very consistent basis of planning and getting information out to people. People are really looking for information, and we want to get the most accurate information out to folks as far as how to stay healthy and how to deal with a lot of different cancellations that are happening.
So let me give the number to callers, Mayor Walsh, so that they can call in and get information from you. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK if you have questions for Mayor Marty Walsh. As you said, Mayor Walsh, things are escalating quickly. Today has been a whirlwind. You've had advice for people to prepare for the inevitable. At this point, what is the inevitable? What are you expecting, Mayor Walsh?
I don't think we're there yet. As of right now, the numbers of coronavirus positives here in the city of Boston and presumptive positives are relatively low compared to what we're seeing numbers in Italy and Wuhan, China, and actually some cities around America and states around America. But I expect those numbers to grow rapidly. There are many tests that we're waiting for results on in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, and I think there are a lot of people waiting to be tested. So I think we're going to see those numbers grow even further. And I think that as we continue to move here, making sure that we're taking aggressive action to mitigate the spread of the virus. That's really what we're seeing here with the closing of museums, colleges, MBA postponement. Well, that was kind of in response, but I was expecting the postponement to come whether or not somebody tested positive for coronavirus. The NHL, the Major League Soccer, which is not Boston but Massachusetts, I'm expecting to hear probably something from Major League Baseball sometime soon. I think that the more we can do as far as action to mitigate, that's the key here. And also continuing to remind people that, washing your hands is very important, cleaning down surfaces both at work and at home, doorknobs. Being careful around if you're sick, being around elderly people, not exposing them to people that have symptoms of anything, just in case it turns out to be a coronavirus situation, because they're very, very vulnerable. People with lung illnesses and diseases. So all of that stuff is part of this. The spread of this can be stopped if we're very vigilant on making sure we take care of our personal hygiene in a lot of ways.
So, Mayor Walsh, you gave a list earlier in that answer about sporting events, and we have heard reporting today that the Boston Marathon is likely to be postponed. At this stage, can you tell us, do we know, is the Boston Marathon for sure not happening in April?
We'll be getting all that information out in the next 24 to 48 hours.
Okay, so runners, everybody will know in the next 24 to 48, but there is an ongoing conversation about whether or not to postpone it.
There's a lot of piece to that. A lot of people said just cancel things, and really what has to go into it, whether you're a business, an organization, a school district, an event, several events, a league. There has to be well thought out plans. It can't just be you just don't wake up one day and say we're going to cancel something. It has to be thought out what are the ramifications of canceling whatever it might be. So when we thought about the St. Patrick's Day Parade, our thinking was, bringing in a million one people into South Boston and putting everyone in the same space, that just didn't make sense a week ago. Now that seems like at the time it was a very big decision, but it's you know, today it seems like a small little decision with all of the other things that are happening. And I think that you know, a lot of what we're doing here is watching what other cities and towns around America are doing. And I think that, you know, in a lot of ways, this consensus. I think that, you know, the governor's declaring a state of emergency last week. He did it after some states have done it, and some states still haven't done it. So there's a lot of conversations going on, both at a local level as far as the city of Boston and other cities in America, and at a state level with the state of Massachusetts and other states in America.
How much are you in touch with the governor and with DPH, HHS, et cetera, as this unfolds?
My public health department is in constant contact with the Department of Public Health. I think I would say that, I don't know if they're connected at the hip, but they're pretty connected, and sharing information on that.
Are you getting what you need from those departments?
Yeah, we're working back and forth. We're helping each other out, and we're getting the assistance and the guidance we need, and we're being supportive wherever we can be. We're talking, myself and the governor, in the course of a day, I don't know how many times, you know, there's 351 cities and towns that he has to deal with. You know, we generally, I try to, if I have information or if I'm looking for some suggestions or he's looking for suggestions, it'll be in the morning and possibly at night. But our teams work very closely together. His chief of staff and my chief of staff are in constant communication. And I think that, you know, that's important. On the other side of the aisle, I'm in conversation with a lot of mayors as well in the course of the day, both mayors from Massachusetts and mayors around the country. Yesterday, I spoke to Jenny Durkin from Seattle. I spoke to Bill de Blasio from New York. And I spoke to Bill Peduto from Pittsburgh. Three very different situations in those three cities. Pittsburgh didn't have, as of yesterday, a positive corona case. But I was explaining to him some of the precautions he might want to consider taking, what we've done in Boston. And I'm talking to Jenny Durkin about, they've had more positives than I think almost any city in America very quickly.
And they're Seattle.
And I've talked through some situations with her, and she's given me some advice on trying to get ahead of certain things.
So, Mayor Walsh, I do just want to note for listeners that the MLB has just announced that it's going to suspend all spring training operations and delay the start of the season. Seattle has closed schools. The Elliott K-8 campus is closed here for a week. Are there more school closing to follow?
Seattle's closed schools for 2 weeks, and I think that, you know, we're working on some plans in the event that we have to cancel school, what do we do and for how long. The Seattle situation, I can't speak to that, but I know a lot of schools in Massachusetts have closed for a week. It's not long enough. I think there's going to be a point. I think that these numbers are going to get bigger, and I think there's going to be some real conversations that school districts are going to have.
What is that threshold, Mayor Walsh? What is the threshold for closing like the Boston public schools for 2 weeks?
There is no threshold at this point. We're dealing with a virus that's unpredictable and that we've never seen before. So everything is new. So there's really no. It's not like my threshold for snow is for closing school is generally, you know, 4 inches or above, maybe 5 inches or above, depending on the forecast, the weather, the timing. We have benchmarks that we kind of watch, and generally when I cancel school, I cancel the day before when it's not snowing out, so the parents have the ability to be able to find childcare and arrangements for the kids. We have thresholds on extreme cold weather. There's no threshold of coronavirus. This is completely new. And I think that, you know, all the people I've spoken to, all the experts I've spoken to, actually some have suggested to me that actually school is one of the best places for our kids, because they're not susceptible to, the virus as much as an adult is. It's a controlled environment, meaning that we can limit the amount of, interaction they have with adults that might have the virus. And we could do that. And, you know, in the situation of the Elliott School, there was a person that entered the school for several days that tested positive for coronavirus. And when we heard that, we found that out yesterday afternoon. We took immediate action to close the school until the 17th of March, and we're doing a deep clean in there, and we're working to make sure that the school is clean. Now, that interaction is going to force us to have conversations about do we let anyone into the school? Now we do have outside providers that come into the school that offer after school services, and we have folks. So we're really having ongoing conversations
like
about
visitors.
Visitors.
The question of visitors might be on the table.
Yeah, how do we keep our kids safe? And I think that and the other side of the coin too, as you think about think about what do you do in the event of closing schools. Many parents don't have the means to having adequate child care.
Or food, right, Mayor Walsh? Isn't that an issue as well for children?
80% of our kids are on free and reduced lunch. We have to come up with a plan, and we're going to be working on this. How do we make sure our kids get the breakfast and lunch that they get in school while they're in school? Is there an opportunity for us to do maybe some online learning? And how do we get the technology to our families, 57,000 kids? So there's a lot of questions that we are vetting through in the event that we do have to close schools for an extended period of time. We want to be able to have, not that we're trying to figure this out after the fact, we want to know before the fact.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to ask a question of Boston Mayor Marty Walsh. We have Megan on the line from South Boston. Megan, what's your question for the mayor, please?
Hi, yeah, I'm curious about the blue bikes that I see all over the city. I know with the warm weather, people are starting to use them more and more, and I'm just wondering about traveling germs with those bikes.
That's a great question, Megan, and I don't have an answer for you, but what I will do is I will find out. I'll try and find out right now about the blue bikes and cleaning them down. I'll try and find out while I'm on the air, and if I don't have an answer for you, by the time this hour is over, we'll have an answer for the station. We'll get it so they can announce it on the radio. Thank you for that. I didn't even think of that. I'm sure somebody has, but first time I heard of it, I'll have an answer for you within 45 minutes, and I'll ask Tatiana to put it on the air.
Thanks, Mayor Walsh. We're going to take another call from Emily in Peabody. Emily, please go ahead.
Hey, so I live in Cambridge, and I work on the North Shore. I'm exactly what you just referred to as someone that goes into the schools as a visitor. I'm a mental health counselor, and I do in-home and in-school work. I also have some immunocompromised clients, and I'm wondering if there's ever going to be a recommendation that non-essential employees stay home.
Do you mean city employees in the city of Boston, Emily?
Yeah, it's a little different. Emily might be talking about state, too. I think that I can talk to you for the city. We are having conversations now. Non-essential employees, at least for the city of Boston, I can't speak for the Commonwealth, and I can't speak for the city of Peabody or some of the school districts you're going to. But when you think about non-essential employees, during a snowstorm or extreme weather, non-essential employees are very different than non-essential employees during the coronavirus. And I'll give you the best example, payroll. If we have a snowstorm and we say non-essential employees don't have to come to work, then our payroll department, for the most part, shuts down and stays home. In a situation like this, payroll becomes essential because we still are going to have city services moving forward, going forward. So we are looking now. We're assessing all of our employees in the city of Boston. Again, potentially, who could work from home? Who has the technology to work from home? Who would have to stay in City Hall? The one thing that I will not do, I will not shut down city government. It's completely, because there's too many services that we provide, whether it's on our roads, in our parks, in our public spaces, that we have to pick up the trash and we have to move our city forward. So we'll never fully shut down City Hall, but we are exploring potential opportunities of people that we can have services potentially that people can work from home.
Mayor Walsh, I'd love to shift gears here, because I would like to ask you before we lose you a little bit about testing. CNN reported today that only 11,000 people in the U.S. have been tested for coronavirus. You can compare that to like South Korea, where they report testing 10,000 people per day. The president said today, if you go to the right area and the right agency, you will get the test. Here is the president.
Frankly, the testing has been going very smooth. If you go to the right agency, if you go to the right area, you get the test. Now, with that being said, as you know, millions are being produced.
So is that true? If one in the city of Boston goes to the right area, are they certain to get the test? And are we able to test enough people in the city of Boston right now?
It's my understanding right now that we do not have enough testing going on. And I know that the state is trying to get access to more tests. We certainly would love to have access to more tests. There's so many open questions of people who are self-quarantining that if they had the ability to get tested, they would love to do that just to get the fear of the concern of having potentially coronavirus over their head. And I think that I'm not sure if it's been approved yet, but I know I talked about it earlier in the week that some private companies, Quest and some other folks, were in line to be able to start testing. I think we have to try and ramp up the tests. Now, what will come with higher tests will be higher positives. So we will have more, but what it does, it gives us an accurate number of what we're dealing with right now with the coronavirus. So that's something that, you know, the state are the folks that administer the test. We don't administer the test. Our public health nurses do work to help track down, you know, if somebody tests positive, who they came in contact with the last 2 weeks, and try and track that down. But right now the test is being administered. Not right now. It's being administered by the state. I think it will always be administered by the state.
Is there anything the city can do to increase access to the number of testing kits for city resources?
Not right now, but anything, if we're asked to do whatever we have to do, we will absolutely step up. And you know, this is not really a financial issue as far as buying tests. I think this is more of an access issue of accessing tests.
I'd like to talk about the economy too, Mayor Walsh. You know, we are seeing massive ripple effects as things begin to shut down, you know, sporting events and all the local vendors around it, decreases in people going to restaurants, decreases in tourism. How do you want to talk to the city of Boston and the people of Boston, especially small business owners right now, about the stress on the economy?
Let me try and address this two ways. One is, when we talk about taking extreme measures, trying to prevent large groups of people in public spaces, and also you know, trying to as best as possible have people you know, not contact each other. That's slowing businesses down, and closing of venues is going to hurt businesses. But I think in the short term, if for somehow this can be somewhat contained, the numbers of coronavirus cases won't be large enough that we'll come out of this faster on the back end. I'm not anticipating necessarily that to happen, but I think by taking some extreme measures now allows us the opportunity to try and contain this coronavirus spread so it doesn't go throughout the general populace. To more people. In the short term, business will be hurting. In the long term, hopefully, it'll be better for businesses. In saying that, my Office of Economic Development is working with businesses and listening to businesses on some of the situations and problems they have, and we're going to try and figure out how we can assist them as best as possible. It's a very complicated matter because we're looking at our hotel industry. I don't know what the number is today, but a week ago the number was, I think they were down 20% in business. I'm hearing their numbers are going to go as low as 30% occupancy. That means that they're going to have, the hotels are going to be empty, which means they won't need the food service workers, they won't need the folks housekeeping, they won't need the janitorial services, which will cause a bigger issue as those folks potentially get laid off. So this is going to have at least for the next 2 to 3 to 4 months, a major impact on our economy and on individuals. And the people I think that are going to get hit the most, which is really unfortunate, are low-income earners, low-income families are going to get hit the biggest because those are the folks, those are the jobs that seem to be right now taking the brunt of what we're seeing so far with all these cancellations and things like that.
I do want to take one call here, one more, 1-800-423-8255. We've got Beth on the line from Brighton for you. Beth, go ahead. Beth, do we have you?
Vicki?
No, I'm trying to get Beth. So we'll try again in a minute. Mayor Walsh, in the meantime, I did want to give you a chance. Were you able to hear anything back about Blue Bikes?
Anything on Blue Bikes? Hold on. I think I have something.
Okay.
Let me just get it. I'm just getting it written from here.
So, Mayor Walsh, while you're getting go ahead.
So the common contact points on the bikes, the handlebars, the seats, the shifters, the bells, et cetera, are being disinfected. All staff who are working on the bikes are wearing gloves. So I'm expecting my suggestion to people, if you ride a Blue Bike, put a pair of gloves on. And just to be safe, but they are being disinfected. I'm not sure, because what happens with the Blue Bikes is sometimes you'll go from one station to another, and then somebody might pick that bike up immediately afterwards. So I'd recommend to people, if you're going to be riding Blue Bikes, you can ride them, you can put your gloves on, and then when you get to your destination, you know, wash your hands. And people should be doing that. I know I already said this, I'm going to say it again. You should be constantly washing your hands with soap and hot water for at least 20 seconds. You should be having hand sanitizer with you, and avoid contact with your hands to your face. That's what's been explained to all of us, that is the way you contract the coronavirus, is by touching your face off of having hands that have been on, somebody might have sneezed and droplets on something that will can transfer the virus over. Walking down the street next to somebody with the coronavirus, just being next to them is not the way you're going to contact it. But we are looking for social distancing, which is about 6 feet away from each other. So
we have one more call I do want to take.
In
this case, I've got Lorraine from Arlington. Lorraine, please go ahead.
Hi. First of all, thank you for your thoughtfulness on this very complicated issue. I did want to ask you, I teach middle school in Boston Public Schools, and my students today were very disappointed about having some sporting events canceled after school. And they asked me why that measure was taken, but that they are continuing to go to school where there's, you know, similar risk. And I wondered how you would suggest answering that question.
I think first and foremost, the sporting events are open to the general public. It's less of a defined area. In schools, we have protocol, we have teachers and counselors and safe spaces. We're constantly cleaning them down, literally almost hourly, with disinfectants, and we're making sure that kids are washing their hands and doing things they have to do. When you have a sporting event, that's open to the public, it's a lot more hard to contain who's attending, who's coming, and kind of screening people. You can't do that. And that's the biggest reason why I think that Major League Baseball and the NBA and the NHL and all these other sporting events have followed suit. And unfortunately, I mean, I love sports, and I think it's a great distraction for people, and it's a great opportunity for young people to do something extracurricular. However, it's about safety. In schools, you have a more controlled environment.
Do you have time for one more question, Mayor
Walsh? Yes, I do.
So a lot of anxiety around this pandemic. You know, it's hard not to feel the level of trauma and stress in the community. What is your message to the city right now?
I mean, my message to the city, to people listening, is to remain calm, to go to the websites, the Boston Public Health Commission website, go to the state website, get information. You know, be careful where you're getting your news from. I mean, when I say that, sometimes somebody sent me an email the other day with remedies about something like my grandmother would have created remedies to combat the coronavirus. And then when we looked into it a little further, it wasn't actually true. It was just somebody made something up. So just get your information from Radio Boston, from other radio stations in the city, from the news, the news stations, the newspapers. You know, constantly just stay vigilant. Everybody can help. The way we end the coronavirus is by everybody looking, watching your own health and making sure that you're not putting people at risk. So if you think that you have been exposed to coronavirus, you know, go home, self-isolate, contact your physician, contact the Public Health Commission, just to make sure they'll tell you what the next steps to take. That's how we stop the spread of this. It seems simple, but it's very complicated. And don't panic. I mean, at least I can speak for the city, and I'll speak for the state. We're going to constantly get as much information out as possible to people, so we're going to overload you with the information. But right now, it's important to do that. We are a strong city. We're a strong state. We come together, and there's an opportunity for us all to come together as one people right now. With all of the disruption in politics and the noise at the level, the national level, I think now's an opportunity for us to shine as people.
That is Boston Mayor Marty Walsh, and I do hope you'll join us again soon, Mayor Walsh. Thank you.
I will. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All week, we've had local experts join us to take your calls on the coronavirus, and we continue that today. What do you want to know? Whatever your coronavirus-related question may be, call us. We'll give it our best shot to get it answered for you. 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And joining us today to help try to answer those questions, on the line we have Dr. Helen Boucher, Chief of the Division of Geographic Medicine and Infectious Diseases at Tufts Medical Center. She's also the Treasurer of the Infectious Diseases Society of America. Welcome, Dr. Boucher.
Thanks very much, Tiziana. It's nice to be with you.
Also on the line is Dr. Joshua Barocas, infectious disease physician and assistant professor of medicine at Boston Medical Center and the Boston University School of Medicine. Welcome, Dr. Barocas.
Thanks for having me.
Now, before we take calls, and we already have some in queue, I wanted to ask you, Dr. Boucher, could you briefly walk us through the course of the coronavirus or COVID-19 from infection with the coronavirus through first symptoms through the end state, both time frame and what that looks like?
Sure, I'll give it my best. What we know about the COVID-19 disease is that for many people, about 80% of people, it's a pretty mild disease. So it starts like a cold or a mild case of flu with things like runny nose, sore throat, perhaps a fever, and then a cough. And for many people, it just runs its course in 7 to 10 days, and there's nothing more to it. For a small number of people, maybe 15 to 20%, there is more severe illness with a higher fever, a worse cough, and for a very small number, breathing difficulty and pneumonia and the need to come to the hospital.
And Dr. Boucher, what is that higher fever, and at once, what stage would one know that you're in the more severe? Is there a number of days difference, or does it happen very quickly?
Well, it's a great question. So it can happen very quickly, but it seems in this infection that there is a kind of a what we call a biphasic or two phases to the illness, and there's a second phase in the second week where some people get sicker with higher fevers and worsening cough. At any time, if someone developed a higher fever that persisted and or a worsening cough or difficulty breathing, that would be the time to seek medical attention.
Okay. And Dr. Barocas, before I go to our first call, just a quick question for you. From a public health standpoint, how would you describe where we are here in the Commonwealth at this stage of the coronavirus outbreak?
That's also a great question. So at this stage, and I'm sure that many of the listeners have been looking at lots of data online. At this stage, we know that there is community spread. We know that there is spread among asymptomatic people, but obviously you're more likely to spread the illness if you're out in public coughing into the air with symptoms, et cetera. You know, it's hard to gauge to say what part of the curve we're actually on. We do know that epidemics have, to some degree, without immediate interventions and sort of proactive approaches, we do know that there's a little bit of an exponential growth, so it can go up very, very quickly. And I think we're still trying to figure out where we might be on that curve.
Thanks for that. Let's turn to our callers, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to ask your coronavirus questions to our panel of doctors. We were able to get Beth, who was trying to ask a question in our first segment, back on the line. Beth from Brighton, let's see if we can help you out. Welcome back. What's your question?
Yeah, hi. So my mom is in a care facility, and she's having surgery tomorrow. They've locked down the facility. We're not allowed to visit. And I'm concerned about, you know, what are the are there any suspected or confirmed cases in care facilities in Boston or in Massachusetts? I mean, we're not getting any information about that. And also, I mean, what are the protocols in the hospital? Should I be concerned about her being exposed as part of a surgical procedure?
Thanks for those questions, Beth. And we'll be wishing your mom well with her surgery. Dr. Boucher, maybe I can start with you.
Sure. So, well, let me start with the hospital part first. I can really reassure you that across our state, all of our hospitals are prepared, and we have measures in place to protect patients, especially patients like your mom, are the most vulnerable patients for this particular disease from being infected. So those procedures are in place, and rest assured that we're all, I know from speaking to leaders across the state, that we're all prepared. The care home question is a more difficult question, and I think it is a good thing, despite the hardship on the family, that they've imposed these visiting restrictions because they're trying to keep your mom safe. And I'm personally not aware of any cases in care homes, but as you know, our testing is limited, and so these measures are to prevent infection, especially in folks like your mom.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to join the conversation. Dave's on the line from Dedham. Dave, what's your question for our panelists?
Well, it was kind of what you were talking about before, but where are we at in comparison to other countries like, say, Italy, where it kind of just exploded all of a sudden, as far as how far behind on the calendar are we from that happening to us possibly? And the other question I have is, of the people who have gotten the cases here in Massachusetts, I think it's 95, how are they doing?
Great question. So let's, Dr. Barocas, let me start by turning to you.
Yeah. So I'll take those questions sort of backwards as well. With the patients that Because of confidentiality reasons, we don't know necessarily how patients are doing unless something comes out in the media. But where we are in comparison to other states, I think it's important to take a step back and say, you know, each state is, and each city, as Mayor Walsh said, is trying to coordinate across the state and across the federal response. And so right now in Massachusetts, as you said, there have been about 95 presumptive cases. Unfortunately, we don't know exactly how big of an epidemic it is right now due to some of the limitations in testing.
Yeah, so Dr. Brokus, I do want to say, I think Dave was also asking you even a bigger question, which is on the sort of the curve of a spike. Where are we in a curve compared to, say, Iran or Italy, where they've had massive outbreaks?
Yeah, so we do have obviously significantly less confirmed cases right now. But as testing becomes available, those numbers will likely grow. I can't say from the public health perspective exactly where we are on that curve. What we are trying to do, though, is flatten that curve. We want to make sure that our healthcare systems aren't overwhelmed, and that patients and people in the community are taking these very proactive measures: washing your hands, staying home if you're sick, calling your doctor, and very importantly, there's this component of social distancing, which should not be alarming to people. But in fact, I actually take quite a bit of comfort in this idea of social distancing. We're sort of all doing this together, and we're doing this for the public health good, so that our healthcare systems aren't overwhelmed. Because we have to remember, there are people that, aside from the coronavirus, all of the other things that are going on in our daily lives and in the healthcare system with medical illnesses are happening as well.
I want to jump in here, Dr. Brokus, just because we have a whole bunch of callers waiting. I want to get some more in. 1-800-423-8255. We've got Eric on the line from Hudson, Massachusetts. Eric, what's your question?
Hi, thanks. Great points, everybody. My question is about the end of the virus. So let's assume lots of people are going to get it and get through and get to the other end. Number one, is there a chance of reinfecting in the same kind of session? And number two, are we okay to go back to work and we're not going to affect other people after the virus has run its course in a fairly healthy person?
Thanks for those, Eric. Dr. Boucher, can I turn to you on that, please?
Sure. So again, I'll try to take both pieces. I think our understanding of when people recover from the virus is that once you've recovered and you're feeling good and you've been without a fever for 24 hours or more without taking any medicines like Tylenol or Advil, you're okay to return to your life and your work. The bigger question of whether or not it's possible to be reinfected is something that we're still learning about. And so I've seen some data coming out of China and Korea, but I don't think we have a definitive answer yet, at least not one that I'm aware of.
So let's take another call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Susan's on the line from Danvers. Susan, what's your question?
Oh, yes. So my question is this this information been brought to your attention from the from anyone? The House Oversight Committee this morning, Representative Katie Porter from California, questioned Dr. Redfield, the head of the CDC. After about a five-minute conversation of her saying, we wrote you a letter last week asking you a bunch of questions, and we want to know, will you commit to invoking your authority under 42. CFR 71.30 to agree for testing, quarantine, treatment for anyone that cannot afford it for free? So these would be the people that do not have insurance.
So, Susan, I want to grab the first part of that. Are you asking if that is true and if the doctors have heard about it?
Yeah, I'm asking if you've heard about it. In other words, I watched this morning. I have it on tape. I've watched it like five times. He finally said, yes, I will commit to invoking my authority.
Okay, well, we're going to pick it up from there, Susan, only because we have so many calls that I want to get to in this remaining time. It is something that I've seen extensively on social media. We haven't gone through the process of confirming that yet, but again, I have seen the social media references to it. Drs. Boucher and maybe Dr. Barocas on this one, have you heard anything about this? Do you have any comments?
So I have, similar to you, I've heard, I saw a very brief clip, but unfortunately we've been taking care of a lot of these issues today, so I haven't actually gotten a chance to dive deep into the media aspect of it
yet. So this is something to watch for.
Yeah.
Okay, let's take another call. We've got Rachel on the line from Brookline, Massachusetts. Rachel, what is your question for the doctors?
Hi, yes. My question is really one of sort of volume and capacity. And, I've been hearing things from Italy, who are sort of ahead of us on this, about triage situations and, you know, people that they just can't take care of anymore. And I'm wondering what our regional and local capacity is and if we think we might ever see a situation like that.
Okay. Dr. Boucher, would you like to take that?
Sure. I'm happy to take it. And I'll start by saying I sincerely hope we don't see that. And the measures that we've been talking about and that Dr. Brookes was talking about, the social distancing measures and the things that we can and are doing now are all designed to prevent us from getting to the situation that our friends in Italy have found themselves in. So we know that our hospitals do have capacity, and we're making decisions, as many of us have announced publicly, to shift some of our activities actually to allow for us to build up that capacity should we need it to take care of what we call as a surge or a group of extra patients that come our way. And we're very fortunate in Massachusetts to have such wonderful hospitals and great resources in terms of doctors, nurses, caregivers, and real experts, as well as the equipment to provide the care should we need to. But I'll come back to where I started and say that the measures that we're taking, these kind of difficult decisions we're making about social distancing and foregoing games and even school in some cases, are all designed to prevent us from having to face the difficulties that our friends in Italy are facing.
1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We are talking with two doctors, Dr. Helen Boucher and Dr. Joshua Barocas, taking your calls on the coronavirus. Heath, you are on the line from Roxbury. What's your question?
Hi, my question's about the flu fatality rate that gets quoted in comparison to COVID-19. And specifically, it's a low number. And what I want to know is, when they talk about that number, does that number include people who are vaccinated and then succumb to the flu? Or is it unvaccinated people exposed to the flu, kind of like COVID-19 is now, and succumb?
Great question, Heath. Dr. Barocas, is that something you can field?
Sure, absolutely. So I think it's important that Heath bring up this issue that we still do have influenza floating around. It's still influenza season. Of course, these are two very different viruses transmitted in similar ways. With the influenza mortality rates, there are a couple things to consider. One is that we have, because we have sort of widespread testing availabilities thus far with flu, and we've been living under the umbrella of influenza for many, many years, we have good surveillance systems, and we know that denominator, how many people have gotten it and how many people have died. Specifically to his question, death, the number of deaths from flu are among vaccinated and unvaccinated people. And what I would say from the public health perspective is that we know that influenza, even if you get influenza and you've had the vaccination, your chances of severe illness and death from influenza are much lower if you've been vaccinated. And I would encourage everyone on listening that if you haven't gotten your flu shot, to actually still get it, because it can protect you from the flu still.
All right, let's try to grab at least one more call. We've got Alicia on the line from Belmont. Alicia, what's your question?
My question is, if you have the symptoms of a common cold, how do you know that you're in the clear and it's not like a mild case and you could therefore be a carrier in the community?
There you go. Dr. Boucher.
Great question. You know, I think that the honest answer is that we don't definitively know at this time because of our challenges with testing. That said, we know that if you have the symptoms of a cold and you practice good hand hygiene and you keep social distance, there is very little risk to you or anybody else. So we recommend those measures the same as you would take at this time of year.
So let's talk about social distancing for a minute. I know we had at least one caller who was interested in that, and I'm just going to pick it up right here. Dr. Barocas, specifically, what does social distancing mean? And in a person's everyday life, what does that mean they should and shouldn't do? We've got about a minute and a half left total.
All right. I will distill it down to a minute. So social distancing is essentially exactly what it means, trying to keep one, safe and safe distances physically away from someone, and second, not being in large groups where that's not possible. Third is not necessarily traveling too far outside of your what would be considered your social network right now. This is not meant, and I want to reiterate, this is not meant to instill panic or fear. It is not meant to be stigmatizing and to make people feel other. In fact, I think that this is one of those things where we can say, this is a situation in which we really want you to stay within your little community right now, so that this doesn't spread, and we can do that together.
Great. And Dr. Boucher, in about 20 seconds, I know we had one caller saying, I've got a baby under the age of three. We have people who come in and help. Should we stop having people from the outside come in and help?
Well, I think that is a question that needs to be balanced in every single case. And I think if you have people coming into your home to help with things like care and things that allow people to work and carry on their life, I think you need to do that and have those people coming to your home. The measures that we can all take are meticulous hand washing, keeping a social distance, and not working when we're sick. And I think that's one of the hardest messages, but one of the most important messages today for all of us in all of our communities is that anyone who is sick should not be going to work.
All right, that is Dr. Helen Boucher, Chief of the Division of Geographic Medicine and Infectious Diseases at Tufts Medical Center, also the Treasurer of the Infectious Diseases Society of America. Thanks, Dr. Boucher.
Thank you.
And also with us has been Dr. Joshua Barocas, infectious diseases physician and assistant professor of medicine at Boston Medical Center and the Boston University School of Medicine. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
No more Bruins, no more Celtics, no more Red Sox for now. The Boston Marathon, as we heard from Mayor Marty Walsh, its fate is in question, and we should hear an announcement sometime in the next 24 to 48 hours. What is next? We have a lot to talk about on sports, and joining us is WBUR Sports and Society reporter Shira Springer. Shira, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with the marathon, Shira. I know you've been following that closely. You've been in touch with the Boston Athletic Association. What do you know at this point?
Well, I know that they're strongly considering postponing the race, and they are looking at fall dates to see how feasible that is. I mean, this is a major logistical undertaking. A postponement would be a major logistical undertaking. You've got more than 30,000 runners coming. They're coming from all over the world. So right now, they're trying to figure out what they can do in the fall. That is one of the options on the table at the moment. There have been meetings all day. The discussions are ongoing at this point.
It sounds like it's likely this is going to happen, Shira.
Yes. I mean, you're talking to somebody who is actually planning or was planning to run the marathon in April and is a registered runner. And I simply don't see how you can hold this race in April. I was also a registered runner for the New Bedford Half Marathon that was scheduled to take place this Sunday. They have canceled that race simply because, you know, they're worried, obviously, about the coronavirus, but the packing of athletes in, you know, the starting corrals, how tightly they're packed was a concern, a health concern. So I simply don't see, given how quickly things have escalated, how you can, in good conscience, hold a major marathon with people coming from all over the world in April in a matter of weeks.
Now, Shira, as I understand it, the marathon has never been held outside the month of April before, and it's been going on for a very long time. So why is the Boston Marathon so important and so sort of sacred to the city?
Well, I think it's sacred because of tradition. It's been going on. It's going to be the 124th year. I think it started in 1897, if I've got my marathon history right. And so there's obviously the traditional historic aspect of the marathon, but also let's not forget the economic impact of this race. According to the Greater Boston Convention and Visitors Bureau, the Boston Marathon and the related events like the Marathon Expo inject around $200 million into the Greater Boston economy. So it's a big economic boon to the city as well.
So let's now shift for just a minute. I want to talk about the big professional sports. The NBA is where this all started. The league announced last night that it is suspending the rest of the season after a player on the Utah Jazz tested positive for coronavirus. I want to listen to a bit of the live announcement last night when the league postponed the Utah Jazz Oklahoma City Thunder game.
And fans, due to unforeseen circumstances, the game tonight has been postponed. You are all safe. And take your time in leaving the arena tonight and do so in an orderly fashion. Thank you for coming out tonight.
Okay, Shira, we are in surreal times in general, but that feels really surreal. Have you ever seen anything like it?
No, I was just thinking, I've been a sports journalist for more than 20 years, and I don't remember a day, a 24-hour period like this. I mean, every time, we talk about a story coming out of the sports world today, it's unprecedented, it's surreal, but it's just one thing after another. It's the NBA, it's MLB delaying opening day by 2 weeks, it's the NHL suspending its season, it's, MLS postponing. I mean, every major league is postponing or shutting down for an extended period of time. And it really is surreal and unprecedented and all of that. And, I was calling around to some NBA folks, like, what do you make of this? I was calling around this morning and they were just like, we don't know. I mean, people in these leagues who are a part of these leagues, who participate in these leagues, simply don't know what to expect, don't know how long it's going to last, don't know what to do with their teams at this point. It's all uncharted territory for everyone across the sports landscape.
It's really spilling over into college sports as well. We know that Duke and Kansas have pulled out of NCAA activities. March Madness is coming up. A lot of tournaments being canceled. Are we headed towards, no college sports and no large gathering sports at all, Shira?
I think that's where we're headed, because I think what happened last night is you see how quickly things can escalate, right? So you have one player who was a positive test for the virus, and then, today a second player on the Utah Jazz tested positive. And then, video surfaces of one of the players, Rudy Gobert, touching all the microphones,
right,
kind of making light of the coronavirus, touching all the microphones of Jazz reporters just a couple of days ago. And so you begin to get, and the Jazz were quarantined in the arena last night, and they're trying to figure out how to get them back to Utah. So you can see how quickly this can escalate if you don't take every precaution you need to take. And we should also mention that the Celtics played the Utah Jazz on March 6th, and they put out a statement today that they are exercising an abundance of caution, and they are going to have players who were in close contact with the Utah Jazz or who traveled to Milwaukee for a game that's now canceled. They are going to self-quarantine throughout the weekend, and all players are going to be tested. So it's just one thing after another.
So, Shira, in 30 seconds, you're a sport and society reporter. What does this mean for our larger sports community?
I think this changes the way we watch sports. I think this will be a major shift in the landscape. I mean, we're already talking about how, live sports were facing competition from at-home viewing. I think fan habits are going to change, and I think there's going to be major economic consequences as well for sports.
That is WBUR Sports and Society reporter Shira Springer. Shira, thanks.
Thank you.
And that's our show for today. Radio Boston is a production of 90.9 WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Tiziana Deering. Please join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.